Okay.
Let's talk about the tactical pirate attacks that we can make on the ship of gold going to Barbados. Where is the ship most vulnerable? When it gets to the near the Pirates of the Caribbean, right? yes, Michelle.
Solvency.
You know what? I'm gonna throw you candy because I think you're right. Where else could they be most vulnerable? Yes. Okay, could be. Yeah, let me see what I had down here. I don't have an answer. Well, okay. Whoop. There's Mr. Abbott. We'll come back to him. Okay, so I guess this is open to interpretation. I thought I had one answer to this, but there's no one answer. I think if Mr. Parks were here, he would throw you the whole bag of candy for that answer, because that would be his first answer. And I think he's generally right. Let me tell you this. I'll come back to you, Jackie O, in just a second. When I'm researching negative briefs, for Blue Book Advanced, because by then all the other books are out. So I start doing negative briefing against what's in the other books. You know, the very first place I go when I see a new case that comes out in a book, the very first place that I go is I go look up the article from their solvency or advocacy expert. That's the first place, because that's usually where when you pull up the rocks, all kinds of worms and roaches are going to crawl out. And that's what I do. I go pull up the rock and see what are they hiding? What's under there? And you wouldn't believe some of the nonsense that I find. Like I told you one about the Russia guy, where the guy said, absolutely, we shouldn't do this case. But that's the guy they were quoting who said we should do this case. Okay? Go look at the article that their advocate wrote and see what he really said. Sometimes I found outright fabrications, where they're just making stuff up that he didn't say. Sometimes, yeah, he said that, but then later he says, but really the fact is that won't work. Okay? So there's one of those in a source book this year too. Has a case where they quote the plan advocate, and later on in the article he says, but that actually won't work, and here's why. Do you want to get caught reading a case like that? No. So that's where you want to really do some digging and find out, what do these guys say? What are they advocating? Okay. So yes, the advocacy is the number one place to go when you're briefing negative. Find out what they're advocating and what else did they say in that article. Next place to go is look in the inherency. Do they have old inherency cards? Maybe they have a 2006 inherency card that says the World Health Organization isn't doing very well. Wow, 2006, okay. Wonder if anything has changed in the last 6 years. Let's go do some research and find out if things have changed. Maybe new policies have been enacted and so on. Be a good place to go look. Look at the dates on their inherency and see if it's changed. Where else? What are some other vulnerable areas in AF cases? Yes? Advantages, yeah. Like what? What could be vulnerable in advantages?
Came up with an example of how they're just saying that there's going to be benefits, but really the card doesn't say that.
Okay, right. What does the card actually say? Does it actually impact? Does the card have impact? Does it have a reason why? Does it have numbers? Does it have some specific thing? Or is it just a blurb card that says, okay, this is nice, or we're going to do this, but it doesn't say why it's good? Yeah. Okay, those are the things I'm looking for. Yes, Chris?
But the judge could have a different opinion on the matter and
not. Yeah. It could be a problem with judge bias that they're trying to appeal to, and you can say, look, this doesn't actually work that way. Okay, now here's the number one most common effective non-evidential, that's a complicated sentence, negative attack. The element most frequently missing from affirmative goals, harms, advantages in debate is impact. There's Mr. Abbott, my old coach. That's him. No, that really is him. He's in the Bangor High School school library there, standing there for his yearly picture. That's what he's thinking most of the time. Most of the time when you make these arguments, he's thinking, so what? Okay? So you need to debate every round as if you've got poor, sleepy, tired Mr. Abbott in the back of the room with his coffee and his cigarettes and his beef eater gin, thinking, so what? I don't care about this case. Okay, so they're going to have a new committee. So what? Okay? You need to give him a so what that wakes him up. Here are some examples that I've seen in actual debate cases. Okay, harm one, the Constitution is being misinterpreted. Do you think he cares about that? Not until you impact it with a so what. If you tell me the Constitution is being misinterpreted and, therefore, 50,000 people had their First Amendment rights denied last year, okay, boom, civil rights are being lost in this country, Judge. Okay, you got my attention. Losing our civil rights. All right? Harm two, illegal immigration increases. So what? Does that cost me any money? Does it take gas out of my 73 Nova? They take my cigarettes away? What does that mean? So what? Okay, until you impact it, I don't care. Why should I vote for that? Well, we're importing oil. We talked about that one. Okay, so what? He doesn't care. $28 billion trade deficit. So what? I don't care. Some economists actually say that's a good thing. So why is that a harm? See my point? And the reason I keep hammering about this is because debaters frequently don't get it. Even advanced debaters don't get this. When you get this, you will be an advanced debater. And when you do it every time, you'll be a really advanced debater. Impact things. U.S. influence is diminished. Folks, that's not a harm. It is not a harm if the U.S. influence in the world is diminished. That only becomes a harm if you tell me why it's bad that U.S. influence in the world is diminished. The U.N. reputation is diminished. That's not a harm. It only becomes a harm when you tell me why is it bad if the U.N. reputation is diminished. Then you've got my attention. All right, here's a related one. Why do we need that? Just because something sounds nice doesn't mean it's worth doing or having. Like the trans fat thing. Oh, we're getting all the benefits of reduced trans fat. Okay, why do we need those benefits? And what are they? Why do we need reduced trans fat? I don't know, the article didn't say. Okay, then why should I worry about it? All right, here's some examples from actual debate cases from a few years ago. Harm one, the U.S. doesn't have the resources to fight another war in the Middle East. Is that a problem? It sounds like a cool tagline. Is it a problem? This would be a good time for somebody to raise their hand and say, I don't know. Oh, Jackie O.
I don't know.
Yeah, neither do I. The affirmative team didn't tell me. And here's how you get at it. Okay, here's how you go after stuff like that. In cross-examination, you go up there and you start a line of questioning like this. Okay, on your harm one, why do we need to fight another war in the Middle East? To reduce terrorism. Did the evidence say that? No. Did it say why we need to fight another war there? No. Thanks, let's move on. Okay, that harm's out of the round. Just blew that up. Didn't take too much effort. Don't have to read a card of my own. Because this thing is simply, it's a so what. Why do we need that? But debaters run arguments like this. You'll see these in cases. You'll see them in source books. You'll hear them in debate rounds. You're going to hear harms like this. Go after them. Don't let them get away with stuff like that. Here's another example. Advantage one, gain strategic presence in India to respond to crisis. Sounds like a cool tagline. Super vague. Okay. Even if it was three words, I would still ask the question, on your advantage one, why do we need a presence in India? To respond to a crisis. What crisis? Any crisis. Name an example. Terrorist attack. Did the evidence say that? No. Okay. Well, did it say what the benefit would be of responding to a crisis, specifically through a presence in India? Well, it would prove our ability to respond. How specifically would we respond differently through India as opposed to other ways? I don't know. Did it say what the impact would be if we can't respond to a crisis through India? No. Okay, thanks. Let's move on. All right. A tagline that sounded really good, when we cross-examine it and get down to the root of it, turns out this is vapor. This is smoke and mirrors. There's nothing there. That's how you go after that kind of stuff. You don't let affirmatives read arguments like this and just say, oh, great, we're responding to a crisis in India. Go after it. Now, to go back to vagueness, which you brought up a second ago, many times affirmative plans contain standards, goals, objectives, criteria, or mandates that are not clearly defined. These can be challenged and impacted, usually under solvency. Sometimes the negative can even generate some vagueness if they want to. Turn on the fog machine, crank things up, make things a little more vague than they used to be. My partner Rob Parks was an expert at that. He loved to generate fog in the debate round. It's like before the round was over, everybody was wandering around, lost in confusion. He was good at that. Okay, how can we do that? Well, here's an example of what not to do. See, it has the red circle, so don't do this. Now, in Mandate 1, the $3,000 federal subsidy for hybrid cars, Judge, they never defined what a hybrid car is, so you must vote negative. Well, no, that's not a reason to vote negative by itself. It's a good start, though. How could he rephrase this? For a candy, imagine the plan is to do a federal subsidy for hybrid cars in order to save fuel, and that's going to save our foreign policy, and that's going to save $1 trillion in the economy. Okay, so we've impacted it. All right, but he forgot to define what a hybrid car is in his plan. So how would you respond? If you're going to run a vagueness argument, how would you run it? Joseph.
Hybrid car can be defined as anything, so it could be giving me $3,000 to anything that we can define
And therefore, what will happen? If we just give the $3,000 to anybody, what will happen?
It's going to cause disadvantages. We don't know what we're funding.
Okay. Yeah, you're 99% of the way there. Anybody want to finish? Yes.
There's no change except for spending the money.
Well, that's a change. We're going to spend lots of money.
Well, you're spending the money, but you're not getting any benefits for it.
Okay. That's where I'm headed. Yeah. Here's your candy. Look, here it is. Here's how I'd argue it. Now, on Mandate 1, the $3,000 federal subsidy for the hybrid cars, Judge, they never defined what a hybrid car is. Without that definition, everyone's going to be able to claim that their car is something that makes it a hybrid car. It's a Ford car with a GM radio. Oh, hybrid car. And they're going to want their $3,000. A two-tone paint job. Two different brands of tires. Okay? So the impact is they'll never achieve solvent. Notice how we impact it. Okay? We don't just say, Judge, plan's vague, vote negative. No. The plan is vague. Here's what it leads to. And here's the impact. They don't solve on reducing gasoline consumption. Why? Because their subsidies go to anybody's car who says it's a hybrid. Anybody with a two-tone paint job or a Ford car with a GM radio is going to get the money. Everybody's going to claim they've got a hybrid car. Everybody's going to get the subsidy, not going to save any fuel. So they don't achieve the solvency they claim in their plan about reduced fuel consumption. Therefore, none of the advantages happen. Impact. No advantages, no reason to vote affirmative. So you can run a vagueness. That's how I run a vagueness argument. Some more examples of vagueness. Technical terms that everyone knows, but really need to be defined in order to have effective affirmative debate. Sometimes you can go after these terms. What is soft power? I mean hitting people with pillows? Military base. Would that include a Coast Guard station? Okay. What is counterterrorism training? Does that mean torture? Teaching people how to torture people? I don't know. If it's not defined, we may not know. So you can turn these around and use them to make arguments. How do we argue it? For example, their experts said we need soft power, but they never defined it. The impact is that they now have no evidence showing that what they do in their plan is what their experts said we need. They can't prove solvency. That's how we impact a vagueness argument. Show what impact it has on the round. Okay, here's two things. If you get nothing else out of this lecture, he's not schizophrenic, but he only has two things in his mind. Besides the gas for his Nova and his Chesterfields and his beef eater and his coffee and his job. He can't remember too many things, but that's all he can remember. Says who and so what are the negative debater's two best friends. Says who and so what. All right. Says who that the quality of life goes up. Oh, well, that was what the debater said, wasn't it? Wasn't what the evidence said. So in this case, the negative would say, says who? Who says quality of life goes up? Who says that whatever else it was in that card that it didn't say? There's all that stuff the debater was saying that wasn't actually in the evidence. So the negative gets up and says, well, who says it's going to do this? Was that in your evidence? Well, no. Okay. Then you argue it. The evidence didn't actually say blah, 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 blah. And of course, our old friend, so what? No impact. Minor repairs and counterplans. I love minor repairs. They're a real-world strategy. I have a whole lecture on them. I'm just going to summarize here. Minor repair is a proposal by the negative team for a small, insignificant change in the status quo that could solve one or more of the affirmative's harms without adopting the resolution, without doing the affirmative plan. The classic example, if I can give you an example from real life, is imagine that you're going to go to work in the morning. Well, let's take Mr. Abbott again. He goes out to get ready to drive to school in the morning. He's got his cup of coffee and his Chesterfield. He's not drinking beef eater before he drives. He knows better. Goes out to his car, and he gets in the car, and he puts all this stuff down, and it starts up the car. And he had trouble with his 73 Nova. It was always breaking down. Usually at the tournament in the middle of February in Maine, when it was 10 below zero. Won't start. What am I going to do? I'll call AAA. So he calls AAA. Doesn't have a cell phone. It hasn't been invented yet. So he goes back inside. That takes a while. He's got to get another coffee and another Chesterfield. And after he gets well fortified, now he can call AAA. And AAA tows the car down to Sammy's garage. And then he goes down with the tow truck, and Sammy looks at the car, and Sammy says, Mr. Abbott, I got news for you. He said, your car won't start. He said, I know that. It's all right. But here's the deal. It could be one of two things. It could be that the fuel filter is broken. If that's the case, it'll take a half hour and cost $30. We'll just change the fuel filter and you'll be good to go. However, it might be that you need a whole new engine. If that's the case, it'll take 3 weeks and cost $3,000. What do you want to do? Well, Mr. Abbott, being at least a fairly sane and rational guy, he may not be the sharpest tool in the shed, but he's fairly rational. What do you think that Mr. Abbott's going to do? Jackie O. Of course. He's going to try the minor repair. Because if the minor repair works, then we don't need the major significant reform, right? It's only going to cost $30. It's low risk. What if you wasted all that money changing the engine and then found out that it was the fuel filter? How would you feel? I mean, that would be terrible. So we always try the minor repair first. Because if something tiny and small can fix it, why in the world would you waste all that time and effort and money on the big thing? Yes?
Do all of the same rules as the counterplug?
Not really. Because, again, a minor repair, you don't have to bet the round on a minor repair. If you're running a counterplan, you're usually going to bet the round on it. But with a minor repair, it's just one more argument that you're making in a long list of probably 10 others. If you lose on it, you can probably still win the round on the other stuff. It's just it's a smaller type of strategy that you use. So maybe you can't beat the harm. Maybe the harm is going to happen. And you say, well, I don't have any cards to take out their harm. Let me give a classic example. In fact, I just did a debate camp. This was like 6 or 8 years ago. I just done a debate camp with some students. I introduced them to the concept of minor repairs. They'd never run one before. And then a couple weeks later, I had one of my camp kids was in a debate round. And the affirmative plan was there was all these illegal drugs getting into Puerto Rico. And it was wrecking Puerto Rican society and jolting the crime rate. And everything was really bad. So the affirmative plan was reroute all shipping in the Western Hemisphere so that it doesn't go through directly to Puerto Rico, but stops in Florida first. And then they can do the inspections in Florida, and then they can go to Puerto Rico because they didn't have enough inspectors in Puerto Rico. Now, what is the way more obvious solution to that drug inspection problem, Hunter?
Add more inspectors.
Why not just add a few more inspectors in Puerto Rico rather than reroute all the shipping in the Western Hemisphere? Ay, yay, yay. Why in the world would you do that? So then went in to see the negative who'd just been to my camp a few weeks earlier, got him and said, Judge, how about a minor repair? What if we just hire a couple more inspectors in the port in Puerto Rico? I'm like, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Why don't we just do that instead? We don't need this big, huge chain reform in our total policy. Just hire a couple more inspectors and be done with it. Okay?
So, go ahead. So you can run this along with trying to attack and take down.
Sure. You can do both. You can say, Judge, minor repair. Hire a couple more inspectors in San Juan. And by the way, Judge, there is no big drug problem in Puerto Rico. And by the way, inspecting the ships won't work anyway, but we could hire a few more inspectors if they think it will. I mean, you can do all those arguments at the same time if you want to. Chris?
So the negative team does kind of be a power over there? I mean, because it's like under the balance of resolution except for significance.
Right.
So wouldn't it mean that you'd be infringing the plot, like you wouldn't have to be out over that after the negative team?
Well, you're still denying the resolution. It's a real-world type argument. In the real world, people really do propose different types of policies like this. In the real world, in the Puerto Rico case, that's really real world what we would really do. We really would just hire a couple more inspectors in San Juan. We wouldn't reroute all the shipping in the Western Hemisphere. So it's a real world type of policy option that denies the resolution. No, we should not significantly reform, blah, 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 blah. All we should do is just hire a couple more inspectors.
But it doesn't infringe
on fiat power. No. I mean, you can propose it to the judge. Say, this is what we should do instead. And the judge can say, okay, if I vote negative, I get a couple more inspectors in San Juan. Yes?
What would the affirmative team counter-argument?
In that case, they couldn't because there was no way they could beat it. But that's a good question because if you write a case that's vulnerable, that's so obviously vulnerable to a minor repair like that, it's a bad case. I mean, and that was a horribly bad case. So the first thing is don't write cases that are vulnerable to minor repairs like that. But secondly, if you did and someone ran one, one way to do it is to have backup evidence that says the minor repair won't work, that won't be enough to solve. So you got to brief it out and be prepared for it. Okay? Then we'll talk about counterplans. All right? Counterplans can be a strategy that they're not as cool as they sound. I hate to burst anybody's bubble. Counterplans to me are more like, like in football, they have the Hail Mary pass. You know, at the end of the game, there's 5 seconds left, and you're down by 6 points. And so you only have time for one more play, and you're like 50 yards away from the end zone. So you just go back and throw the ball as hard as you can and hope that one of your guys catches it. Maybe you'll catch it, maybe you won't, but it's the only shot you've got. If you don't do that, you're going to lose. That's, to me, as a coach, and as I'm coaching, giving my best coaching advice, these are not absolutes. These are not, you got to do it my way or you're wrong. This is just my best coaching advice to you based on having judged several hundred debate rounds and hundreds of debaters over lots of time. This is my advice to you. My advice to you is the counterplans are that kind of a strategy. They're a last ditch. We got nothing else to use. Let's try a counterplan. Basically, when would you run a counterplan? I would run, oh, okay, you want to take a shot at it? Okay, go ahead, Chris. Yeah, particularly which part of their case can you not go against? Harms is what I was hoping for. I'll give you a candy, but I was really listening for harms. If I have trouble beating, I'll give you an example. A couple of years ago, we had the a case on India, human trafficking in India, and the affirmative team was gonna fund some programs to try and reduce that in India, and there was nothing we could do about the harms. And me and Mr. Parks were debating negative against a pair of students as a practice round. We had nothing. We couldn't beat the harms. We had to agree that the harms were there because we couldn't touch them. But we had a counterplan. And the counterplan, and the reason for running the counterplan, we had a card that said that we also have human trafficking problems in the United States. And we had a card that said that India views us as hypocritical for criticizing them when we have the same problem. So, so we ran a counterplan to increase anti-human trafficking programs in the U.S. and cancel any criticism of India until the problem is solved in the U.S. and have a review board every so many years to try and review it to find out when we've solved it in the U.S. before we do anything with India. The risk of any plan like that is what? What's one of the problems that you could argue? If you're affirmative, what argument would you first make about that? Is exclusivity. In other words, why not do both? If I were the affirmative team, I would say, why not run an American anti-trafficking plan at the same time do our plan too? So vote affirmative and then do the negatives thing later. No, it would just be permuting the counterplan. It would be saying, fine, do your counterplan, but do it after you vote affirmative. Because you have to vote for our plan in order, you have to vote affirmative to get the affirmative plan. Then we'll do their plan later. Let's do both. Now, the negative response to permuting the counterplan, the negative response to do both would be no because of hypocrisy. We can't do both at the same time because we'll violate hypocrisy at that point. And India will get mad and backlash. So that's the reason why you can't do both. You have to pick one or the other. And that was the negative philosophy, that we have to pick one or the other. If you go affirmative, we lose hypocrisy. If you go negative, you don't get the affirmative plan, but you do avoid the hypocrisy, and then we can review and come back later. We can come back 5 years from now, judge, and think about their plan later. So, of course, we'll be long gone by then. There won't be any resolution to do it, but that's okay. We'll think about it later. Anyway, a lot more to say about counterplans, but I want to kind of wrap it up. Yes?
What do you think of counterplans?
I personally don't like them. I know there's lots of coaches, or at least some coaches, not very many. And I will tell you, I had a conversation with the director of the league, the NATO year. And you remember, y'all weren't debating then, but it was resolved that NATO should be reformed or abolished, I think was the resolution then. And he actually told me, he said, the reason we put reformed or abolish in the resolution was to prevent negatives from running abolished counterplans every round, because then they'd be affirming the resolution. So the debate league, I would take it from that, frowns upon topical counterplans, because they specifically put reform or abolish in the resolution. So if the affirmative team says reform, the negative come and say, no, let's abolish. But if abolish is in the resolution, now it looks like the negative team is also affirming the resolution. So they put that in there to stop negatives from doing that.
The counterplan has to be non-topical, correct?
In my opinion, yes.
Okay, but
in many debaters and many coaches accept topical counterplans and believe it's okay to do them. Here's the thing. Let me summarize it kind of quickly for you. The risk, from the negative perspective, the risk of running a topical counterplan. And by topical counterplan, I mean a counterplan that could also be run as an affirmative case. That's what I mean by a topical counterplan. All right. The risk of doing that on the negative side is, first of all, you then have to run a lot of arguments about debate theory as to why your topical counterplan is justified. Okay. When really you want the round to focus on the counterplan. Now you have to focus on debate theory. So you have to debate two things now instead of one. Whereas if you just run a non-topic counter plan, boom, problem solved. It's very clear. Try to explain parametric debate theory to a community judge. Okay, it's hard enough to explain to fellow debaters, much less get up and explain it to a community judge who just walked in off the street about why do we have two teams that are both saying the resolution is true. Well, don't worry, judge, it's okay because I've got this theory. Let me read to you from these five experts and so on. Okay, I mean, you can do that if you want. You know, I'm not saying that everybody believes that is crazy or stupid. You can do that. I'm just saying as a coach, I would coach you not to go in that direction. I think it's unwise debating. Based on my experience as a coach in this debate league, I think it's unwise, and I wouldn't coach you to do that. You know, do what you want. Talk to your coach. Talk to your peers and your competitors. Find out what judges are voting for and what they're voting against. But that's just my coaching advice to you. Chris?
Is there a set of criteria that you have to meet to run a counterplan? Like, it has to be,
I can help you with that. Yeah. I know where you're headed. Yeah. Okay. Typically, the criteria for a good counterplan under classical debate theory, you know, again, this is generally what people expect. Typically, the expectation would be one would be non-topical. Again, that's debatable. Some judges, some coaches are okay with it. But I would urge you, and classically they had to be in the 70s and 80s, non-topical. In other words, deny the resolution. Again, do what you will on that. Number two, they need to be exclusive of the affirmative plan to such an extent you couldn't or shouldn't do both at the same time. So you can't do the affirmative and the negative counterplan at the same time. The judge has a clear choice. He has to pick one or the other.